Welcome to a three-inning save podcast. Jacob Birch, Eric Steven, this has been a big news week for the Dodgers. What's the latest you have for us, Eric?
That's right. The Dodgers traded TJ McFarland to the A's on Tuesday. So we're going to our podcasts are usually about an hour, about maybe 20 minutes of that is questions from Craig. So we're going to go 40 minutes on the non-roster left-hander and that trade and what the Dodgers received in return, which was the almighty cash considerations. So
breaking only the top news here. Right. Something about Shohei. We'll talk about that too. And opening day is in like 15 hours or something like that. So
No. Yeah. It's more than that. It's like 36.
Oh, wait. There's another day isn't there? It's not Wednesday, apparently. 37 hours. Maybe by the time this comes out.
I did the. I believe it's 43 hours roughly from when we're starting.
Whenever. Point being soon. So we'll break that down after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So we got the big news out of the way. Should we go over the other stuff?
Yeah. Now that we've moved TJ McFarland out of the way and got his news cleared. So last week when we recorded little mini episodes after each of the first two games in South Korea, the morning of the second game, all the like Shohei Ohtani stuff was just breaking. It basically broke like in between games, you know, and there wasn't a lot of info out. So we just kind of sort of laid out what we knew at the time, and I believe what we talked about was like just the absurdity of it, because obviously there was very little information. That there's still like little information, but there's been more bits and bits. But we were like, I think I said something like, you know, was this supposed like team meeting after after the opening day, was like Shohei just in the team meeting going, what is he talking about? Like, you know,
and
turns out that according to Shohei Ohtani himself, that is exactly what happened. It's been a bizarre week, man. Like, so first of all, it's America's reintroduction to Will Ireton. So, you know, previously he was, for a while he was Kenta Maeda's translator, and then he also gained some notoriety, at least on like Dodgers Twitter, for having some fun clubhouse hijinks at times. You know, he was always prone to do kind of whatever was asked of him, and he had fun with it. But he's like worked his way up, and like, you know, he wants to do other things, I'm sure. And he was working in the Dodgers baseball operations department. He was in like the R&D area, and a lot of times I would see him the last few years where, let's say, Walker Buehler or someone is throwing a simulated game at Dodger Stadium before a game, they'd go on the big mound and they'd have the track man plugged in, and then he'd have the laptop up in the press box, and he maybe one other person, and they're like tracking the pitches as they come in, and they're measuring everything, and he's going through this, and this, or maybe he's setting up, helping James Outman set up like a swing thing or whatever. So he's been involved, he's been around, but like obviously not as front facing as he is now, because he took over as the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani because Ipe Mizuhara, as we, I believe at the time we recorded last week, we knew he was fired, right? I think that was right. But anyway, he is fired. He was from the Dodgers. But
yeah.
So I will say, so Shohei Ohtani gave a statement at Dodger Stadium on Monday, the second day of the freeway series. He did not take questions. So frankly, the expectations were the floor on this. Like, it was very low in terms of substance. Like, because, you know, there's not going to be questions. I don't know how much he's going to say. He ended up saying a lot. We'll get into that in a second. But I just want to say, like, Will Ireton was very studious. He was taking notes. And I asked a few Japanese reporters after, and I said, like, how do you think Will did translating? And they said he did excellently. So, like, that was a good sign, at least, because as we're going to get into, like, it turns out maybe sometimes either Shohei's words weren't getting properly filtered, or you know, or weren't accurate, or maybe, but it was maybe a two-sided inaccuracy or whatever. But we'll get into that. I don't want to be too flippant about it. But anyway, so just the big takeaways from the Ohtani statement. This is, again, as translated by Will Ireton, this is what Ohtani said. Quote, "I never bet on baseball, any other sports, or never have asked somebody to do so on my behalf. And I never went through a bookmaker to bet on sports." And then later, he said, "Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies." So, right away, it's one. So when the news broke, I think as we recorded last week, there was the statement from Ohtani's attorney saying there was a massive theft, but they didn't name Ipe Mizuhara in that statement. Right? This was very direct from Shohei Ohtani, like the kind of thing where if it's not proven to be true, it is a legally actionable, like defamation type thing. I'm pretty certain, right? Like, there could be blowback. And so I did at least appreciate the forcefulness in that regard. Again, it's hard to, you know, take much if someone's not like answering questions, and there are still questions. But Tisha Thompson at ESPN has had, like, I think the most thorough reporting on this. She was the one who got Ipe Mizuhara to do an ill-advised 90-minute interview the night before, or I guess the day before in Seoul, the first game, and then before it all, hell broke loose. But she had a nice, few days after the firing, she had a nice timeline of how, like, everything went down, at least from her end, and then what she learned from people in South Korea as well, as it sort of broke. So the reason I think this was on anyone's radar is because a gentleman named Michael Bowyer is an alleged bookmaker in Orange County. He's currently under federal investigation. Now, I believe this federal investigation is part of a larger, like, Southern California illegal gambling ring. It's been going on for a few years. There was a former pitcher named Wayne Nix, I believe, who was also involved a few years back. Included in that investigation a couple years ago was Yasiel Puig.
Comes back.
Right.
Full circle.
And so where Puig got in trouble was not in the gambling itself, but I believe he was charged with lying to federal prosecutors.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a press release from, like, the feds basically back in, like, late in 2022 saying Puig was going to plead guilty to, I think, obstruction or something. And then the day he was going to do that, he changed his mind and pled not guilty. And I believe the trial is still pending on that. So that's an ancillary thing, right? That's just another sort of Dodger connection. But So the LA Times and ESPN both reported on Ohtani's name coming up in wire transfers to Ballyar. ESPN, in the Tisha Thompson article, she saw receipts for at least two payments of $500,000 each, one in September 2023, one in October of 2023, from Ohtani's account to Ballyar. It might be Boyer. It's probably Ballyar because there's a W. Anyway, and she also reported, there was a total payments of at least $4.5 million, right? But she saw specifically receipts for these two payments to Ballyar. So at this point, according to Tisha Thompson's timeline, ESPN contacted Nesbolelo, that's Ohtani's agent, last Monday. This was before opening day, asking about the two payments that she saw totaling $1 million, those payments. Within a few hours, a quote, crisis communications spokesperson who was just hired by Ohtani's camp got back to ESPN. I'm quoting here from Tisha Thompson's article. Quote, the spokesman for the first time says Ohtani paid the debts on behalf of Mizuhara. He says Bolelo, the agent, went to Mizuhara, who finally came clean to him and said that was the truth. And Ohtani told Bolelo that he had covered Mizuhara's debts in $500,000 increments. It's not clear whether the spokesman is saying Ohtani communicated with Bolelo through Mizuhara. The spokesman quotes Ohtani as saying, quote, yeah, I sent several large payments. That's the maximum amount I could send. So it'll come up again, but it's a matter of, did Ohtani say that, or did Ipe Mizuhara say Ohtani said that? And that's where the crux of a lot of this basically is, just given what we know. But that same crisis spokesperson somehow authorized a 90-minute interview of Mizuhara by Thompson at ESPN, and that spokesperson was on the call as well, so monitoring the whole thing. And that's where he laid out everything, I have all these debts, and Ohtani wanted to help me pay, all that stuff that came out last week. But then let's cut to after the Dodgers win Wednesday morning Pacific time. Opening day. After the game, there's a team meeting in the clubhouse. Mark Walter, the owner's there. A lot of the front office was there. So this is again from Thompson. Mizuhara apologizes. This is again, middle of the locker room. Mizuhara apologizes, according to the official, and tells the team he has a gambling addiction. A Dodgers executive, Andrew Friedman, stands up and says Ohtani had helped cover Mizuhara's losses, the team official and others present said. So this is the part where we were like, what? What was Ohtani thinking at this point? Now, he said in his statement on Monday, Ohtani did, that he's like, I didn't have my translator, near me, but through context clues, I figured something was amiss, basically. And then he sort of pieced it together as the meeting went on, and then afterwards, right, he cleared it up. So Ohtani, in his statement Monday, said, quote, Ipe has been telling everybody around that he has been communicating with Shohei on all of this account to my representative and to the team, and that hasn't been true. So this is the crux of a lot of it, right? Is according to Ohtani, at least, Mizuhara is saying Ohtani said to do this, or at least not relaying the right message, or relaying the wrong message, or saying something on Ohtani's behalf when it's not necessarily true. But man, at this point, you would think there'd be there almost has to be some redundancy set in. How does he have that much power, right? That's one big question. How is nothing else how is this not sussed out? I guess, but we'll get to that in a second. So I'll say I did not expect much from Ohtani's statement. So he was pretty forceful in that regard. So at least that was something. Like I said, what he said, right? It was fairly important. If any of the stuff he said is untrue, or at least can't be proven, and Ipe could have case to sue him. So it seems like something, at least at this point, you would guess. But given some of the other stuff, maybe his counsel is not advising him properly. But you would guess that what the statement Ohtani had was heavily reviewed by multiple lawyers, right? You would imagine before he said it. So I do have a hard time wrapping my head. This is probably just a me thing, but around not being able to notice $4.5 million missing. But then if you look at it, right, Ohtani last year alone made $95 million, $30 million in salary, $65 million in endorsements. So, like, I get it. It's like a certain amount. You're like, are you really going to notice something if you're not, like, checking your balances all the time or whatever? Still, you also at that point can afford to hire a money manager who can say, hey, by the way, what's up with this? You know, like that sort of thing. But it's a different world, so I'm not going to pretend to know about that. Now, I will say this, there's obviously still questions, and in terms of letting the authorities handle this, which I believe Shohei also said in his statement on Monday, to date, it's unclear what Ohtani side had actually done in that regard. Tisha Thompson, again, on Tuesday night at ESPN, had an article sort of updating that aspect of this. She said, quote, when asked Tuesday to provide proof that Ohtani or his representatives have reported the theft to an investigating agency, a spokesperson for Ohtani declined to comment. ESPN received no confirmation from any of the likely local, state, or federal agencies that could investigate allegations of theft that they received a report from Ohtani's camp. So, like, yes, we're going to let the authorities handle this, like, but when? I don't know. Like,
and well, yeah. Now, to be fair, they also basically said no comment, right? So,
oh right, it doesn't
whether
mean
or not
haven't.
They
yeah.
have heard from Ohtani's camp. So,
but yeah, but I think the part where like ESPN like followed up, right, and like it, if the camp has done something, the authorities at least haven't said they've received anything.
Yeah,
not that the authorities are always going to be like, oh yeah, we got all the information,
right?
Like, you know, they're not, but just, you know, but it's very clear too that like Mizuhara and Ohtani had a very deep level of trust, right? They've been together for like a decade or, you know, something close to it. Obviously the 6 years with the Angels, but also partially in Japan first. That's how they knew each other. And that's all just over now, right? Like mm-hmm. that's been upended. And it's also clear there's been like several like failures along this whole process, like even getting to here. So you have the Ohtani statement, the ESPN reported timeline, and all the backtracking from Mizuhara after his 90-minute interview. The only way that all works, right, is if this story checks out, is if Mizuhara is like essentially the only go-between between Ohtani and seemingly everyone. Well, I have a couple things for you here. So Fabian Ardaez's report at The Athletic on Monday, he noted this. I'm just going to quote from his article. Also under scrutiny is how the Dodgers and Ohtani's representatives entrusted Mizuhara enough to have him be the lone point person to Ohtani while they knew Mizuhara was the subject of this line of questioning. Rather, they followed their typical order of operations. Every communication from the Dodgers, agent Nesbolelo, or his representatives at CAA went through Mizuhara, even without Ohtani present. That meant no one from the Dodgers or CAA supposedly ever talked to Ohtani directly about the looming story involving Mizuhara before the interpreter addressed the club after Wednesday's season opener. Mizuhara claimed to ESPN he never misrepresented anything while interpreting for Ohtani. So it's like, damn, man. Like, that's wild. Like, the part, like, I know it's just a small part of, like, the whole, like, Andrew Friedman getting up in that meeting and being like, yeah, and he helped out his... How do you not, like, have, like, Ohtani in a huddle, right, yeah. beforehand, where you're like, hey, I'm going to go over this. Are you cool with it? You know, that kind of a thing. Like, you would... I don't know. Even... Yeah, it's just odd. But then there's this. So, and then, as we've come out, right, it seems like every other new day, there's, like, a little bit... A little detail here, a little detail there. Dave Roberts has been, like, commenting a little, not a ton. He didn't want to go into details about, like, when Mizuhara was fired, like, in South Korea and all this stuff. But I didn't go to the last game in the Freeway Series, which is still being played right now as we're recording. It's in Anaheim. But before the game on Tuesday, this is from Jack Harris at the LA Times. He tweeted, Dave Roberts made the point today that it might be easier for the Dodgers coaches and staff to communicate directly with Shohei Ohtani now that Ipe Mizuhara is gone. Roberts described the previous arrangement with Mizuhara and Ohtani as being, quote, difficult at times. Then another tweet followed up. Roberts described Mizuhara as being a buffer around Ohtani, even for baseball-related conversations. Quote, In the last couple days, I think Shohei has been even more engaging with his teammates, Robert said. Quote, I think there is only upside with that. So it's like, all right, man, like, this is wild. So it just, you know, who knows?
Nothing adds up, like, even, right. Like, you know, I think when we last recorded, to kind of go back to that, I feel like there was the report that he had been fired, but the Dodgers didn't make it official, maybe. I mean, maybe that was where we were.
Yeah, it might have come later that day or something, yeah. That it was vision. I honestly don't remember.
Either way, we knew that was right. Had happened or was happening.
You know what? No, they did, because Will Ireton was the on-field interpreter for Yamamoto in Game 2, and that was before we recorded the second time. Yes. But yeah, you're right.
And so one line, but then it was like, well, maybe the most obvious is that what Ipe's initial story is true, and then he got told to completely the backtrack, and this is all just kind of making up to make Shohei look good. That was a very believable line where I saw a lot of people going. Since then, none of it adds up. Nothing makes sense to me on a possible explanation. And this is, will make an amazing 30 for 30 once and if we ever get a firm timeline.
Yeah. And then, so, and just to sort of lay this out there too, since we recorded last time, MLB said on Friday that it was investigating this whole situation, basically. You know, the reports regarding Ohtani and Mizuhara, but it's expected, because as of now, like, there are no, like, any of the stories that I've seen, no direct ties to actually betting on baseball. The where Ohtani would get into trouble is if he had knowledge of the direct payments to the, like, an illegal bookmaker, right? But even that is, like, I think it was, what, Jared Cosart, like 5 or 6 years ago. Similar thing. He got fined by Major League Baseball. If Ohtani would have, like, placed a bet or something with that, it's a little worse. But, like, I don't know. I think it's more association.
Yeah, and that's kind of like, if it was sort of Ipe's original story, it seems like even if the lawyers were late to the party and got wind of it, it feels like just copying to it and taking what would likely be a fine. And but I just lost sort of power. My computer went off, but we're back. So let's good luck, producer Brian, stitching this together. I said that last week, and he took it as a challenge. I think. Yeah. So
I'll show you and make you look competent. Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, we have what Ipe said originally, which seems like more or less.
Yeah,
they had just copped to story. It and probably been fine. The only way this makes sense is if Shohei hears what Ipe said and goes, absolutely not. No way is that what happened.
Right.
So that makes me want to believe that side of the story. But then there's so many things that just don't, like, one, you have to absolutely buy into the naivety of Shohei. And then there's just a lot of other things that don't quite stick.
Right. And I'm sure more layers will be peeled back, and it's probably going to get, like, probably uglier and uglier and, like, messier and messier. I will say, so the original, like, Ipe interview story of, like, Shohei helping his friend and paying off the bookie or whatever, I guess there's the possibility of, like, committing a federal crime by, like, wiring money knowingly.
Sure, no, I mean, it would be, but my at least very naive, not a lawyer understanding was that a lot of the times in those situations, people, either the gamblers or the people in the in-between frequently just don't get prosecuted.
I would say that would be at least
versus this where that. Like you've said at the top, like you are defaming, like you have to like nail so many things.
Yeah, they basically put out a checklist saying like here's what we have now.
Yeah,
now you just got to show it, right? Like show it. No, anyway. I will say, I guess also last week, the IRS said they were opening a criminal investigation into the case, to at least to Mizuhara, I guess. And then there's also that an ongoing, like, federal investigation into that entire, like, Orange County bookmaking ring. So that could also turn up more, like, you know, but I guess as of now, Ohtani's expected to, like, he's playing, like, he played tonight. Like, he's going to still play until further notice, which it's super fun for false equivalency Twitter to take note of that news. I will say the funniest moment for me of this whole situation so far was Ohtani's like quote unquote press conference. All he did was read a statement, but it's in that interview room. No cameras were allowed. And so like everyone had their phones, but like we were very highly discouraged to not take pictures. So there were no like wire images of the press conference, but at least SB Nation, we're contracted with like Getty Images and USA Today. So if we search in our photo database, we could see what the latest image is up. So when I was writing about the story about the statement and all this, and I go to find a picture, and the main pictures were photographers in the Dodgers press box upstairs taking photos of people watching the TVs or taking a direct shot of the TV, which was showing the statement, which was being broadcast live, which made it so weird that they weren't allowing photos. But like, it was just this funny thing. So there's like a bunch of like wire photos of like, you know, people looking at the TV or like just show. There's one with like weirdly with a salad in the foreground and the TV like in the back. That made me laugh very hard. So at least there's a bit of levity there.
Do we have any baseball to talk about?
Yeah. So the Dodgers are almost done with the freeway series. I went to the two games in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. Jose Suarez of the Angels had a 3-inning save Monday. So that was a highlight
for
me.
This is no longer a Dodgers podcast.
And I looked. Because it said in the box score, Jose Suarez save 2. And then I looked at his spring training game log. He had a 4 1/3 inning save as well this spring when he gave up 5 runs. God bless that man. He's our new patron saint. Jose Suarez. Dodgers trade for him immediately. Fun times. I do. Speaking of baseball, though, seamless thing. Oh, as we're recording this, literally Eric Karros is the analyst for Sportsnet LA doing these games with Steven Nelson. And he is broadcasting his son Jared pitching right now against the Angels, which is
pretty good.
Which is pretty cool.
Can we make every segue here on up? Speaking of baseball,
yeah. Well, I don't remember where this was from, but my cousin and I used to do this all the time. We'd be like, "Speaking of hydraulic suspension," it's just like some random thing like that. I don't know. It's stupid. We're dumb. We're dumb people. But not you. I'm talking about me and my cousin. The Dodgers restart the schedule. They have the home opener on Thursday against the Cardinals. And if you look at their lineup this year, they have a lot of lefties, especially against righties. I know like Jason Hayward's going to platoon. I would imagine Gavin Lux is going to sit sometimes versus lefties. Maybe James Outman will sit versus lefties. But they have 6 regular left-handed batters in the lineup. It's Ohtani, Freeman, Muncy, Outman, Hayward, and Lux. My question to you, Jacob, which Dodgers team had the most plate appearances by left-handed batters?
All right. I hate this trivia question, but yep. I have a way to make it fun, and we're going to make it fun after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Which Dodger team summoning left-handers? Most plate appearances by left-handers, yeah. In the year. Two things. One, I really want to meet the person who just like knows this cold. You know, just memorizing random stats
on
a per-year basis.
Right off the bat, I did not go through every. This is a hard thing to search for, And mm-hmm. the only way to truly do it is to go through the batting splits of each year. But if you go to batting splits on Baseball Reference, you know what it does? It says the split is versus right-handed pitchers or versus left-handed pitchers. Or it has specific splits like versus right-handed pitcher as left-handed batter. And then another split is versus left-handed pitcher as left-handed batter. So to get the left, you have to – there's a lot of work there on each page. So mm-hmm. I did not go through every year. I did – some searches to like get me to some years I think could have happened. Mm-hmm. And then I went through a bunch of those.
So you may be lying to me.
Oh, I might be giving you a false answer. But please do not issue a statement saying that I'm a liar.
No, not that you're a liar, that you told lies.
That's right.
Stole dignity from me and told lies. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to make a stupid guess. And then I'm going to play, you're going to Bob Barker, that's Drew Carey, that's, we're going to clock game it. All right. Uh-huh. So you'll say later or earlier.
Let me give you a hint, because they had some lefties last year, right? This is not so much more of a baseline. It wasn't last year, I'll say. But just as a baseline, last year they had 2,808 plate appearances by left-handed batters. That was 44.3%. Of the total plate appearances. So I found at least 7 years that had over 50% by left-handed batters. There might have been more, but I basically had a cutoff of total plate appearances I was trying to find. So,
okay.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yep.
2018.
It is well before that.
1950.
Well after.
1970.
Well after.
1980.
Still well after.
1990.
After.
2000.
Before.
1998.
Well before. Stop doing increments like one or two.
I'm roughly binary searching. 91.
That's right.
Yeah. See, there we go.
So that year, it looks like by far... 3,901 plate appearances against lefties. It was 63%. Like, of this list, the 61 team had 55.6%. 62 was also 52.6. So I'm looking at the 91 Dodgers, right? If you look at that team had a lot more switch hitters than I remember. Eddie Murray, obviously. But, like, the top plate appearance on the team, Brett Butler, lefty. Number three, Eddie Murray, switch hitter. Number four, Daryl Strawberry, lefty. Cal Daniels next, lefty. Lenny Harris next, lefty. Socha next, lefty. Alfredo Griffin, switch. And then you go down like aforementioned Dodgers rewind, Stan Javier is a switch hitter. We're going down a little bit more. These are all the people with more than 100 plate appearances. But Chris Gwynn was a lefty. Jose Offerman was a switch hitter. So it was had a lot more lefties than I remembered. So that was pretty good.
All right. You know what? Yeah. I think Craig's questions, trivia questions for you, are going to be better. And we're going to find out right now because it's time for...
Questions from Craig.
All right. Speaking of baseball, Mookie Betts collected six RBI in the second game of the season. This week's trivia is about players who drove in that many runs in a game. You ready?
Sure.
You ready?
Yeah.
Mook, two players almost said the same thing again. Two players in their Dodger careers have driven in six or more runs in a game five or more times. Can Eric name those two players?
Oh, boy.
I have a hint for you if you need it.
I'm just going to rip the Band-Aid off. Duke Snider, Gil Hodges.
Gil Hodges is correct. He did it seven times.
Uh-huh.
Do you want the hint for the second one?
Not yet.
Is it Craig provided hint?
I don't know if that changes things. Yeah. Let's see here. Let's go. I'm going against the grain a little. I'm gonna go Steve Garvey first.
Nope.
Even though it was a relatively short time, let's see what Mike Piazza does.
Number two on this list with five. Well done.
Nice.
The hint was they're both in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay, nice.
Mookie Betts has seven total RBI from the leadoff spot in the first two games this season. In LA Dodger history, only two other leadoff hitters have as many as four RBI in the first two games of the season. Can Eric name those two Dodgers?
I mean, probably not. Like, Yeah, I looked something up because he had the seven. Oh wait, I'm trying to think now. Oh yeah, so he, so the guy he was tied with seven through two games for second was Spider Jorgensen, but he was in Brooklyn, so he wouldn't be on there. And I'm the only person with more, was Ken Lander with eight, but I'm pretty sure he didn't bat leadoff, so I'm not going to say him. But let's just go with Let's go with Rafael for call.
Nope.
Okay. Four RBIs, leadoff spot. Davey Lopes.
Davey Lopes is one of the two players.
Okay. And then
I'll buy you a beer if you get the next one.
Oh, boy.
Without a hint. And I'll give you a hint and then you'll probably be able to get it.
Sure. There's no rhyme or reason to this guess. So I'm just going to say Mariano Duncan.
Nope. You want a hint?
Sure.
The year is 2019.
Oh, Jock.
There you go.
Yeah.
Not that it was too surprising, just not like the immediate.
He hit two home runs on opening day, which was, I believe, the last time they had opening day on March 28th. Which is, well, this year, not technically opening day for them, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Betts is one of four players in MLB history to drive in six or more runs from the leadoff spot at least twice in their career. One, mostly a utility infield, played for eight different teams in the 2000s. Another is an active player who will likely be in Dodger Stadium this weekend. And the third is a former LA Dodger who did this playing for another team prior coming to Los Angeles.
Active player this weekend. Oh boy. I don't remember this person batting leadoff. The one I'm thinking of is it Matt Carpenter?
It is Matt Carpenter.
Okay, and then so then the other one, utility infielder, eight different teams in the 2000s. And a leadoff person. I don't remember. No, that's not it. The eight teams thing is messing with me. I'm having a hard. Maybe the only, this is not right because there's no way he played for this many teams. But I'm just gonna say Shannon Stewart because I can't think of anyone.
Felipe Lopez.
All right. Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
You want the stab at the other one? Former LA Dodger who did it playing for another team prior to coming to Los Angeles.
What? Oh, I didn't see that. I didn't hear. I was blocking out that.
Another hint. He will also probably be in at Dodger Stadium this weekend.
And this is a leadoff person.
Yeah. I may have, that might have not been a very friendly hint. Rick Monday is the answer.
Okay.
See what I did there? That's pretty clever. Pretty clever.
That is pretty good.
Thank you. Speaking of baseball, since 2017, five other Dodgers have as many as six hits and seven RBI in a two-game span. Can Eric name at least three of those Dodgers?
Well, I'm going to go back to the well on this. I know it's not, he's not talking about leadoff, right? It could be anyone.
Correct. Correct.
But I'm going to go back to this well because I remember him having one of the hottest streaks I've ever seen. Rafael Furcal.
It is not Rafael Furcal.
Okay. What about Rafael Furcal? No. Raul Mondesi?
Nope. One more strike.
Andre Ethier.
No. Jeez. Oof. Rough. Yeah. Matt Beatty.
Come on. Oh, yeah. Cody. He had that. He had that. So the one game where I can't remember, he drove in eight and someone else drove in seven because they both hit like grand slams or something.
Cody Bellinger, sure. Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, Justin Turner.
Sure.
You did good on the first three.
Yeah, I did. And then I bailed.
Last year, Tony Gonsolin was the fifth Dodger starter to win a game in the Dodgers' 41st game of the season. For the contest, name the fifth Dodger starter to win a game. And for the tiebreaker, closest to the season game number that win occurs. Let's hope you and I pick a different player.
So just to sprinkle in a little bit of baseball news, the Dodgers did shuffle the rotation a little bit. Jacob is making a motion like he's Salt Bae, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, it's amazing that I know who Salt Bae is, to be honest. But so the news is they shuffled the rotation a bit. So they went Glasnow Yamamoto to start. So they're going Glasnow on Thursday against the Cardinals. But Yamamoto is being pushed to Saturday. Bobby Miller's Friday. So Dave Roberts didn't go into super detail. It was also like that first press conference where it was like a lot of Ohtani stuff. But he basically said like it was schedule related. But if you look at the schedule, they start with 7 games before an off day. So Glasnow and Miller, in theory, will be pitching on 4 days rest next week against the Giants. Then they have the off day. So that way, now you get Yamamoto 5 days before Wrigley Field. So his schedule had been weird. Part of this was South Korea related, but like he only pitched 3 times in the Cactus League, but they essentially just spread it out. He pitched 3 straight Wednesdays in Arizona. And then his start in South Korea was a Thursday, and then now he's going to pitch Saturday. So he's basically been he kind of pitched once a week in Japan, right? Now, they said it's going to be a transition, right, for him to go to like shorter rest. Now, he's not, you know, we've seen the Dodgers. They only start like on 4 days rest like a third of the time because they utilize off days. They do spot starts, all that kind of stuff. But I think at some point he's probably going to have to start doing a little bit shorter rest. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder how they're going to transition that. Now, the other sort of fun factor here is that there looks to be some pretty big rain this weekend in Southern California, to where there actually might be a rainout at Dodger Stadium on Saturday. Now, obviously, a lot could happen, but, you know, we saw the rainout ahead last year where they had to reschedule a game. But there hadn't been one for 23 years prior to that, so it's pretty rare. But that could also throw a wrench into plans. You never know. But like I said, figuring out pitching plans like a week or two from now is always a fool's errand because everything could change in a drop of a hat. But that's where we're at rotation-wise. So the rotation to start now is Gonsolin, Miller, Yamamoto, Stone in game 4, and then Paxton.
Gonsolin?
So did I say Gonsolin?
You did. Glasnow is who you meant.
Yeah. Gonsolin, not quite
surprising
ready.
News.
he's going to be the fifth Dodger starter to win the game this year. Oh, man. That's going to be a rough
That's
one.
Rough.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. The other sort of newsy type thing. So, you know, Walker Buehler, innings limit, basically rehabbing, has his spring training in April, but he might be a little further along. He pitched a 4-inning simulated game at Dodger Stadium on Monday. So he's doing a bullpen session, I would imagine, Thursday or Friday. After that, he could go on a minor league rehab assignment now, or he could do like another facing hitters and then a rehab assignment or whatever. But I don't know how many starts he's going to have in a rehab assignment. You figure at least 2. Given that he's already doing a 4-inning sim game, but it could be 3. But like, he could be like 3 weeks out at like the earliest, I would imagine, just being conservative. So he might be next in line. Emmett Sheehan's been throwing. He's also on the injury list, but seems to be doing okay. I don't know. He still has to build up though, so like that's part of it. Obviously, they could do spot starts, like literally not with Trinan and Gratterall on the injured list. They have Michael Grove and Kyle Hurt in the bullpen. So, like, they have, like, spot starter material, and obviously Ryan Yarbrough. So those guys could do that too. So I'm just like, so okay, back to the question. So name the fifth starter to win a game. So Glasnow didn't win because they won late on opening day. So I think the fifth starter that's going to win the game is Yamamoto.
I will go with, I suppose, chalk, quote-unquote, Gavin Stone.
Yeah. Okay. And then
would I have said Gavin Stone had you said Gavin Stone? No, because I didn't want to be the tiebreaker.
I only was thinking of like part of it, you know, I'm not like trying to overrate the terrible debut he had where he gave up 5 runs in an inning, but also it's weather related. Like if Saturday's rained out, then he just gets pushed further down a little bit. So like, you know, it's like a day here, day there, that kind of a thing. More chances for other guys to win. So let's guess the game number.
But I don't want to.
I don't know. Game.
You can go first. I'm going to try to think at random.
This is not going to line up with my guess. Because it wouldn't, because it's a tiebreaker. Ah, smart. Game 10.
Oh my God. Okay. I wrote mine down ahead of time. I wrote 24.
Confident. So, confident right here.
You should have said, what if you said 5? No, I guess it couldn't be 5 because Stone is pitching game 4. So you like 9. Yeah, that would be yours. So you're basically saying Stone is getting they're going to spot start someone, and then but to be fair, the rain could mess things up. So you're going to be right on. Yeah.
Mike Trout won his third MVP in 2019. Since then, he has played 290 games and accumulated 12.7 BWAR. Can we expect another MVP-type season in the future from Trout? I don't know about expect, but you can't discount it. He's healthy for a year.
You can't discount it, but I don't think you could ever bet on it.
Yeah.
I just want to see him healthy.
I mean, you could.
Someone could.
On DraftKings, the official.
That's right.
As long as it's on DraftKings or FanDuel.
Right. Funny, right? There's been, like, of course, this, you know, as news break, it's like ESPN. There's like a screenshot of ESPN and then the bottom
DraftKings
line.
DraftKings breaking
like
news ESPN, report.
Right. And then, like, literally, I believe ESPN Nation, we're partnered with DraftKings. Yeah. So it's like, that's at the top. It's like, all right, like, what are we doing here? Right. But, like, yeah. I mean, Trout's going to be good, but I just want to see him be healthy. I hope he is, but I'm not expecting it.
Is Dave Roberts or Aaron Boone on a hotter seat going into the 2024 season?
This is easy for me. It's
Aaron Boone.
It's
not
very
close.
Clearly Aaron Boone. Like, yeah. And not to say there's not pressure on Dave, there is, but it almost, unless like there's some massive like F up, basically, they're not going to do anything like in season, right? Unless they're like 40 and 50 or something in mid season. And they're like, wait a minute. But I think basically his is like, it's playoff related, right? If they have another early exit, that's probably when it happens. But like Boone is like, they've been like disappointing for years and like, you know, under expectations or whatever. And there just seems to be like this is obviously from afar. I don't know anything. I'm not reporting on them, but there just seems to be like a malaise there, right? Like the thing is the Yankees are actually probably going to be pretty good. You know, they have issues like every team does, but, I got to think it's Boone more than Roberts pretty easily.
All right. We all love a slice of pizza. When given a choice, do you take a slice of cheese, pepperoni, or another type of pizza first? Now we've done the what your pizza look like. To me, this is you're at a generic pizza party. So you don't get your custom made,
right.
My jalapenos extra sauce. What are your go-to? And it has to be pepperoni.
This is easier than Boone.
If I know
Roberts.
The place and I know they have good supreme, then okay, maybe I'll go there. But like,
it's
one bad
pepperoni.
Vegetable is just like, oh, this is actually not good anymore.
Pepperoni is the pizza topping, right? Like it's the universal, like for me at least. And you have to do pepperoni. I don't mind a cheese pizza, but I would consider it a downgrade over a pepperoni pizza. Like, even though there's like, obviously you could have a great cheese pizza or whatever, but
yeah. And this is assuming a normal cheese, not doing this margarita where there's basil and fancy things going on. Yeah, just give me a slice of pepperoni.
Yeah. Once again, Craig has made us hungry. Right,
yeah,
after
I had pizza yesterday, but I have a sandwich behind me. It has ranch. I eat ranch with pizza because I'm basic like that. So
I've been more prone. I do the red pepper flakes and stuff, but I also I also like putting a little hot sauce on there.
Sure.
It's pretty good.
But then you need a cooling sauce like ranch. Ken's Ranch.
Nice.
There you go.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Maybe next week when we record, we'll have more Shohei Ohtani updates. But most likely, we'll have four actual games to talk about, so that'll be at least better. But yeah,
well, maybe, right? We also might.
Oh, you know,
maybe
we might
do a weather report.
We might have two. We might have two games to talk about. We might have three. You don't know. We'll at least talk about the revised schedule ahead or whatever.
Yeah.
and how far along we are on the fifth Dodgers starting pitcher to get a win contest. But that's it for us today. This is Three Inning Save Podcast. I am Eric Steven. That's Jacob Birch. Thank you to Brian Salvatore for producing, and thank you to Craig for stumping me with questions. We will talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Good one, Eric.